Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Action Network Podcast, named Best Betting Podcast or Radio Show by the Fantasy Sports and Gaming Association, and the number one show for the invested sports fan.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Four!
You got real talent. Don't concentrate on golf.
What's up, everybody, and welcome once again to the Action Network Podcast, the Golf Edition. I'm Jason Sobel from Golf Bet, and alongside with me, as usual it wasn't usual last week, but now my full-time regular partner, Justin Ray of the 15th Club, the head of content there. And we've got a little announcement to make before we go any further. Justin is in Austin, Texas, at his home right now, where it is 18 degrees outside, and you've been going in and out of losing power all day today, Monday. And so we're recording here on Monday evening. And if the power goes out, I guess I'll just keep talking to myself.
Yeah, I'm learning what the term rolling blackouts means. And from my history, that was usually like an aggressive college football weekend back in my, back in my early 20s, maybe a Vegas trip, bachelor party. This is a different kind of less desirable rolling blackout where I guess the power grid isn't set up for the amount of demand that's being placed on it. Pretty much everyone in Texas, I guess their heat comes from electricity. So it's a big mess, and I hope everyone's staying safe. Luckily, I've had enough power to do some research on this week's tournament at Riviera. And hopefully, it was a little crunch for time, was a little off my schedule because I didn't have power till about noon today. But, we'll try to make some good picks. But yeah, rolling blackouts and not the desirable kind.
Yeah, I thought rolling blackouts were when you get obliterated during the member guest and your foot slips off the brake of the golf cart and
I could deal with. But
yeah,
this is like lack of heat and power. So
okay, so
non-zero chance that we go dark here.
Yeah, if at some point we lose you during the podcast, I'm just going to keep talking to you as if you're there, and you just kind of be quiet because you won't be there. So people will figure it out.
I can't control what you do anyway. So have at it, bud.
Before we get into Riviera this week, and I can't wait. I got my Riv shirt, I got my Riv hat on, so I'm ready to go for Riviera. By the way, I always dress appropriately for the podcast, which people are only listening to and can't watch, which is makes a whole lot of sense. I can tell you I'm wearing anything right now, and you'd believe me. So let's get into what happened this weekend at Pebble Beach. A few takeaways from this. First of all, Daniel Berger was 107th in the world just about 8 or 9 months ago before the PGA Tour restarted in June. And now he is 13th in the world after winning at Colonial, the first event of the restart. And then, of course, this past weekend at Pebble Beach, he looked fantastic. A great question that I was asked today, and I want to get your opinion on, is what is Daniel Berger's ceiling? Because I have a somewhat definitive opinion on this, and I want to get your take on what you think his ceiling could be.
Well, that's a good question. I'd say 10 wins and maybe a major.
Okay.
That's a great career.
Of course.
That's a fantastic career. So, that's beyond Stuart Appleby, who had 9 and no majors, and like short of Fred Couples, somewhere between those two. He's a little bit overshadowed in what's looked at as his peer group. That you always hear that term, the class of 2011 from high school, which is, JT, Spieth, Xander, a lot of really high caliber players. And I mean, this is a guy who can make some Ryder Cup teams and, contend in major championships. He's definitely got that type of game. And we saw it this week at Pebble Beach coming down the stretch. He's a really good ball striker. He's got a well-rounded game. Really like his demeanor in big moments. He's kind of a bulldog. So yeah, I'm wondering what you think the ceiling is. If you say you've got a definitive answer here.
Well, okay. So one of my biggest pet peeves, and this happened at maybe one or two of the places that you and I both used to work at, but a Monday morning analysis would come of whoever just won. And it's always, boy, I tell you what, if he plays the way he did this weekend, he's going to win a lot of tournaments. And it's like, well, yeah, but that's the whole point. He's not going to play the way he did during that victory every single week. I mean, if he did it, he'd be Tiger Woods. He'd win every
week. It's really hard to win golf tournaments.
Of
course. It's really, really hard.
So we have to look at the guy's baseline, not necessarily just his A-plus, like, best game that he's got. I also think that what I've always thought that what separates the top tier of players from the next tier is that the top tier can win any place, anytime, any week. Dustin Johnson, you put him on a 6,700-yard golf course where you barely have to take driver out of the bag, and then put him on a 7,900-yard golf course that's just a big ballpark where you're going to mash it. And Dustin Johnson is going to be the favorite on either one of those golf courses and has a really good chance to win on either one of those golf courses. I think what separates that top tier from the next tier, and I put Daniel Berger in the next tier, no offense to him, but I just don't know that Daniel Berger, based on where he's won so far, TPC Southwind twice, Colonial, and now Pebble Beach, which is, of course, the shortest venue on the PGA Tour. I don't know that he can go to, say, a Torrey Pines playing 7,700 yards, whatever it might be, for the U.S. Open this year, and seriously contend without having his absolute best stuff. Can he be up on the leaderboard? Sure. Can he beat all of these other players that hold an innate advantage in their length over him? I think that's going to be a little tough for him. And so I think that and it comes down to, you know, when we talk about his ceiling, it comes down to sort of where we'd put him on that totem pole of elite players right now. That's the one thing keeping me from saying, oh, Daniel Berger can be a top five player. He can be an absolute elite player in the top tier. I still think, yes, he's very good. Let's not do the Monday morning quarterback thing where we go, I think he can win 12 majors, and, you know, then just get too exaggerated and carried away.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good analysis. I always dislike that kind of hyperbolic reaction too. You know, after the 2014 PGA, Rory McIlroy is going to win 11 majors. Like, yeah, three guys in the history of the sport have done that. Like, he might, he's really good. He's at a historic pace, but there's a lot more, you know, of the, you know, win them in a burst and then not so much. I mean, let's go back in time to 2017 when Jason Day was just eviscerating everyone on the planet. I guess that was probably 15 into 16 when he was the best player in the world. And you think he's a world beater, he's going to win six major championships. Like, look, it's really hard to win tournaments, keep that pace going. Like, those who do end up as one of the 10 best or 15 best to ever play. So, you know, careers like Tiger, Phil, and, you know, now DJ, really, that's the supreme exception. You know, just doesn't happen that often. It's tough to do. But my only counter to your point about Berger, 54-hole co-leader at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock. So, I mean, yeah, I know that was a weird year, and that was that Saturday where – you know, Phil had his moment where he, you know, played hockey on the green, and, you know, it was kind of a crazy scoring day. The Zach Johnson, they lost the course day, and, you know, but he was the 54-hole co-leader at Shinnecock, big course. So I think at his peak, he's got the capability to, but he could, like I said, he could get to double digits wins, and I could see him, you know, winning a major championship. A PGA maybe might fit him, or maybe an Open one day, but, you know, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see where he lands on the spectrum there.
Okay. If he wins a major or two, maybe I'll elevate his status to superstar status. I think right now just regular star, not superstar, is where
I think we appropriately did the skip Stephen A half and half to a proper extent there, where there's a little bit of a disagreement, but not hyperbole for the sake of shouting.
Yeah, I think we can do without that. For
don't make me be Bayless. God, I was his researcher. Jeez.
Oh, we did. Michael Collins and I did a podcast with Skip way back in the day. And I hate to say it because I wasn't a big fan of the show and I wasn't a big fan of his. And he was absolutely awesome on the podcast. And I was floored because I was fully prepared to be like, this is going to be the worst thing ever. I can't believe we're getting him. And why are we doing this? But it's a big name. If he tweets it out, a lot of people listen to it.
For sure. Yeah. And
he was awesome. He couldn't have been better talking about golf. I swear. Wow. I didn't expect it. I never thought it would happen. He's telling stories about Hogan and Nelson from his Dallas roots, and he was really, really good. And whatever tournament it had been, I think it was right when Ricky Fowler won the Players' Championship. And he was going back, you know, it's only a few days later, but not just, oh, yeah, I know that Ricky won the Players. I mean, he was going shot for shot down the back nine, talking about everything that every player was going through. I mean, he knew exactly what was going on, and he was – who's really into it. So I don't know.
Just and I kid. I mean, the times I worked with him, he was totally professional to a 24-year-old who didn't deserve his time of day. So, you know, from a totem pole speaking standpoint in TV. But no, yeah, I think we went on both appropriately there, split it down the middle with the future for Daniel Berger. Great win. One of the number that I was that I most was surprised by was how well he scrambled. He led the field in scrambling percentage. Made me think a lot about what Gary Woodland did at the U.S. Open a couple of years ago, where he entered the, you know, scrambling short game, not Gary Woodland's calling card. Certainly wasn't that season going into Pebble Beach, and he led the field in scrambling at Pebble Beach en route to his U.S. Open win. So it was, that was one number that kind of brought back that memory of what Woodland did a couple of years ago.
I want to talk about Jordan Spieth real quick before we get into the field at RIV this week. First, two commonalities that I thought were very interesting about the last three champions on the PGA Tour. One is tangible in the fact that Patrick Reed, Brooks Koepka, Daniel Berger were each coming off a missed cut the previous week. I mean, we're in the prognostication business, the prediction business. The one thing you look at is, hey, let's see who's in form, who's sort of gaining some momentum so they can start playing well and maybe contend this week. They're all coming off missed cuts. You know how hard that is to figure that stuff out? And the other thing that I'll say is more of an intangible, but you look at three guys who play with absolute chips on their shoulder, whether they are realized or imagined. Patrick Reed is a guy, okay, I get the chip on his shoulder. You know, I totally understand it. And, you know, whether he put it there himself or the rest of the viewing public has taken it like that boulder they moved out of the way for Tiger years ago in Phoenix and placed it upon his shoulder. There's one there. Brooks Koepka with a perceived chip on his shoulder because he thinks, I don't know that, you know, we
– uses it as fuel.
Yeah,
uses it as fuel. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, he thinks that we don't think he's as good as – he actually is, or something like that. I don't know. And then Berger yesterday, after he won, he was asked about being underrated. He goes, I'm underrated. He goes, good. I hope you guys keep calling me underrated. I get that chip on my shoulder and I'll keep firing back. So I don't know. Maybe great. If Daniel Berger listens to this, I said he might have trouble winning a major and, you know, that gets him more fired up to play better.
I hope he's mad that I said he'd win 10 times and win one major. If you're
10, Justin Berger,
you're like, you know, what the hell do you know? I'm going to win 30 times and win five majors. So, you know, yeah, definitely. That's the way I do it, if that's what someone said to me. So at least that's the way I look at it. But yeah, no, Spieth, first player to hold the 54-hole lead in back-to-back weeks and not win either tournament in 8 years. Daniel Summerhays did it in 2013 at the John Deere and I believe the Sanderson Farms, which may have been opposite field that week with the Open Championship. So it's been a long time since that happened. Tough for Jordan, but his driving number is not great, but his iron play really good. Once again, he's at 75% of his greens in regulation over the last 2 weeks. Entering this stretch the last 2 weeks, he was under 60% for the season. So I think that's one thing that people can take positively going forward for Jordan.
There are some people who will listen to that stat, Justin, and go, oh, last person to have that 54-hole lead back to back and then didn't win either. Daniel Summerhays doesn't even play golf anymore. He's out of the game. So, look, that's where Jordan's headed. I'm telling you. Like, Jordan can't do it anymore. You know, he's going to be just like Summerhays. He's going to be out of the game in a few years. This guy's terrible. I can't tell. I mean, I spent the entire weekend basically playing whack-a-mole with Twitter trolls. And one of the bigger subjects was the Jordan Spieth is never going to get it back. He can't win. He can't play on a Sunday with pressure on him. I'm like, guys, relax. My tweet was, hey, 2 weeks ago, if we told you Jordan would have back-to-back top 25s, you'd be like, wow, that's really good. Wait,
hey, he's trending. It's positive.
Top fives. Yeah. Whoa, that's crazy. Went from nowhere to top fives. And now we're sitting here and we're supposed to say, oh, yeah, but he didn't win either one. So, you know, I think he's probably washed up. The question, I've gone over this kind of on my radio show, Hitting the Green on SiriusXM PGA Tour radio earlier today. And I'll bring this up with you. Jordan thinks he's an elite player. Is that correct? I mean, that's
for sure.
That's fair to say.
Three majors. Youngest two-time major winner since Gene Sarazen. I'd say that's elite.
The elite players, when do they want their games to peak?
There's 4 weeks a year, maybe five if it's a Ryder Cup year.
And it wasn't this past weekend, so why would we look at what Jordan's done over the last 2 weeks where he hasn't finished up golf tournaments on a Sunday afternoon and say, well, he can't get it done now. So, you know, that was his best chance and he's not going to get it done. can't we instead look at it, Justin, that he's building up his way towards those bigger events later in the year?
Yeah, my point would be, you were talking about that Daniel Summerhays, he was the last guy to do that. It's really more, you rarely have a guy lead after 54 holes back-to-back weeks. Like the guys who have done it recently, it's DJ in the playoffs, Justin Thomas in Hawaii when he went nuts a few years ago. Like it doesn't happen. Brendan Todd, when he had that out-of-body experience in the fall swing a couple years ago,
yeah.
It doesn't happen very often. It's like, it was only like six or seven instances of it happening during that span since 2013. And just all those other instances, someone won one of the two tournaments or in a few instances won both of them. So, I mean, look, it's really difficult to put yourself in that position every so often. I think I always try on Saturday night, I try to give perspective to what, you know, the question always, if a guy is a 54 elite and doesn't win, he's always hammered, right? He's always just blasted. Like this guy can't close. Like he's, you know, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have the, you know, the intestinal fortitude to get it done down the stretch. He just can't do it. Players with a two-shot lead on the PGA Tour the last 15 years win 40% of the time. 40%, mm-hmm. Less than half. Flip, that's a two-shot lead. That's not tied. That's not one shot. That's, you've got a legitimate two-shot head start going into the final round. Those guys win 40% of the time. Everyone's perspective of how easy it is to close was completely altered by what Tiger Woods did, because it was so ridiculously superhuman to go 44 for 46 with an outright 54 hole lead. No one is ever going to come remotely close to that again. And I still think we have that kind of perspective when a guy doesn't close that, you know, it's some kind of problem of his. No, it's really hard to win golf tournaments. He had a world-class player, Daniel Berger, Patrick Cantlay's on his tail. Nate Lashley is having the putting week of his life. You talk about trying to prognosticate golf. Nate Lashley was leading the tournament in strokes gained putting before, I think it was 16 when he had the episode. I mean, and he entered the week like 170th in the statistics. So go figure. I mean, a guy had a hot putter and struck the ball brilliantly. He's got all that behind him. Like it's really tough to win. It's tough to close. And, you know, I would more take the positives out of Jordan's iron stats moving forward than, you know, kind of be disappointed by the fact that, look, he was bummed after the tournament that he didn't win. And it's easy to be disappointed in the moment, but take it as a positive if you're a Jordan Spieth fan moving forward.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Tiger has ruined everything for everybody, basically, is what we're getting at. If you're a fan of the game, you're like, how come these guys don't close every single time? By the way, Justin, I've had a player, and I don't think the stats would back this up, but I've had a player tell me before he would rather be trailing by two going into Sunday's final round than leading by two.
Mathematically, that doesn't necessarily make sense, but right. I will say if it impacts his perspective going into the round, makes him a little less nervous, frees a guy up.
Yep.
You know, maybe a guy is you know, less likely to be aggressive when he's successful, when he's an aggressive player. You know, maybe there's some instances where that would be the case. It might work out for that guy, but mathematically, no, you wouldn't want to do that.
We see it all the time when guys have the lead and they tend to play a little more defensively because they're trying to protect the lead as opposed to let's play some offense. You know, it's just like halfway through the fourth quarter, team has the ball. Well, we haven't been running it all game, but we're up. So let's try to run the ball and run out the clock. Well, yeah, that's not going to work. Why don't you just keep throwing the ball because they can't stop you throwing the ball and right. Go win the game. So
college basketball team about to pull an upset. They're up 12 with 4 minutes to go, and they just hold the ball. That's when the other team makes a run. It's exactly. Always like that.
Yep. So let's get into Riviera a little bit. What a fantastic field we've got for the last event on the West Coast Swing this week. 8 of the top 10, I believe 12 of the top 15. Most of the names everyone knows and loves, including DJ, Rory, Rahm, JT, Xander at the top of the odds board this week. So let's start there. That top tier, I'm struggling already. I cannot go as low as plus 550, 11-2 for DJ. I don't care how great DJ has been. I saw your stats you tweeted out. I understand DJ is really, really good at Riviera. I just can't bring myself to go plus 550 for DJ, but is it true? Should he be the clear favorite this week, first of all? And who do you like out of that top tier if you had to pick one of these guys?
The answer is unequivocally yes, he should be the favorite. Over the last 10 years, Dustin Johnson leads this tournament, drum roll, in scoring average, birdie average, strokes gained tee to green, strokes gained total, bogey avoidance, which is a huge thing for me this week, is limiting your mistakes. He's since the PGA Championship, he has 4 wins and 4 rounds over par to tell you about his form. So yeah, I think unequivocally he should be the favorite. But I'm with you. Plus 550 is just – that's not enough, man. I just can't do it against a field this strong.
Yeah. I mean, considering he was 4-1 before he withdrew from Pebble last week, only increasing that a little bit with this kind of field, that's tough. If you had to pick somebody from the top tier, if I said, hey, here's $20, but you can only take one of the top, oh, let's say 6 to 8 guys on the board, everyone who's sort of inside 25-1, 30-1, is DJ the guy that you take just to get a little ROI, or is there somebody else lower on the list that you like?
I'm going down a little bit. I'm going to take Patrick Cantlay. If the golf tournament last week was only held on Pebble Beach, he probably would have won. He shot 73 at Spyglass in round two. He led the field in greens and regulation despite only hitting 11 greens that day at Spyglass. Finished second and third in his last two starts. Five straight top 20s going back to the fall. That includes winning at Sherwood last fall. So he's got some California vibes there. He's second in bogey avoidance here since 2014. Only Dustin Johnson has been better. I think there's just getting a little bit more value there with Patrick Cantlay, a guy who's just been exceptional. I mean, if the putter gets hot, I mean, he can win by 3 or 4 shots this week, I think.
I tend to agree with you. If it's the old proverbial office pool and just, hey, pick a player, then I might go DJ just based on, you know, if there's no odds or anything else that's involved, it's just, hey, for pick sure. a guy you like. And so, you know, yeah, DJ's obviously been good. I really like Cantlay, and I'm still a Xander stan. I will go to battle with Xander Schauffele any given week, and I think that he's got – talk about chips on guys' shoulders. He's got a little chip on his shoulder right now trying to prove to everybody that he is not a choker by any means, and I really don't think that label suits him very well. I think he's a pretty tough dude when it comes to playing down the stretch, so I wouldn't be surprised if Xander sort of views this as maybe a little more important for him than it is for maybe some other players out there.
A guy who's had a lot of success in huge events, right? Hasn't broke through with a win in a major, but, you know, close in the U.S. Open, runner-up at the Masters, runner-up at the Players, Tour Championship, like a lot of events with really strong fields, Tournament of Champions. So he won't back down from that. A guy is, you know, week in, week out, he's got a great chance to win anywhere because he's really good at everything. You look at his strokes gain numbers, he's well above average in basically every, you know, empirical category that they have. So a Xander stan, a stander. That's terrible. I will never say that again.
Xander Stan. Stan Xander? Yeah, there's something in there.
It's terrible. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it should be. All right, let's move on. But you still have power, so that's great. Let's keep trucking. There are a lot of guys. I figure this 30-1 to 50-60-1, that's my usual sweet spot. I usually like a lot of players in that range. I think there's some value, but obviously guys who can really play and are really strong talents. I'll name a bunch of them in this level, and you tell me kind of who you like, who you don't like. I didn't write up Colin Morikawa 33-1 in my preview this week, but I could certainly see Morikawa playing really well on a second shot golf course. Victor Hovland, he's my pick to win this week as far as, you know, a favorite outright. I don't feel very confident in that. He didn't make the round of 64. The only other time he played here at the 2017 U.S. Amateur, but the numbers are all trending in the right direction. 4 top 6 finishes in his last 5 worldwide starts. I like Hideki, although the numbers have not been good lately, so I don't love him. I like Scottie Scheffler, but speaking of numbers, his ball striking has not been good this season. I don't know why. His strokes gained approach, I was pretty shocked when I saw he was 182nd this season, which is way worse than I would have thought he was. Joaquin Niemann, I like a lot. We tend to, you know, just sort of forgetting about guys if we don't see them for a little bit, out of sight, out of mind. He was second in Hawaii and hasn't played since then. So I think he's going to be a good one. And a couple of guys that we've seen play well here, Max Homa, who's basically playing well every week on the West Coast. Then Mark Leishman's got a couple of top fives in the past 5 years at this one. Any of those names or anybody else strike you as guys that you like?
You like Victor Hovland, so do I. Tied for second at Torrey Pines on a tough course. Tied for 6th in Saudi Arabia in his last start. He's hitting about 75% of his greens in regulation this season, top 10 on the PGA Tour. My only concern around Riviera is the thing he professes that he's been on camera saying he sucks at, which is his short game. Scrambling a little bit more important than normal when it comes to winners week to week, comparing it to the PGA Tour average. here at Riviera. So a little bit of a concern there, but I think his ball striking is so good it carries him everywhere. I mean, he's a guy sneakily into the top 15 in the world, kind of like all of a sudden, you know, a guy who's going to be on the short list to be, you know, next to break through and win that next, that first major championship. I mean, right behind guys like Rahm and Xander, and maybe he might jump ahead of Finau by the time we get to the Masters. You never know. So I like Hovland a lot. I think there's some good value there, and I don't know. Breakthrough. My bet on him would be a top 10, not to win necessarily, but you know, he's really interesting to me this week.
I want to ask you, and I'm putting you on the spot here. I don't know if you've done the research on this yet, but is there anything about inexperience that should keep us and hold us back from a guy like Hovland this week who hasn't played in the Genesis before? Is there something to having played this one 3, 4, 5, 6 times in the past and at least kind of knowing the golf course a little bit? Like I said, he's been there in competition, but it was 2017 U.S. Amateur, shot, I believe, 72, 78, and did not advance to the round of 64.
Yeah, totally different too. I think, you know, a few years removed, a guy who's had some experience in some big events since then, and it's probably a different caliber of player now, obviously, as he gets into his pro career. You know, we've had some experience pay off there in recent years. J.B. Holmes beat Justin Thomas coming down the stretch a few years ago. Adam Scott, the defending champion last year, Dustin Johnson winning and getting to world number one a couple of years ago. Maybe there's something to be said for, you know, for experience paying around Riviera. We haven't had too many really young winners there recently. And like you said, I don't have all the numbers right in front of me, but I think there is something to be said for that. There could be some more value there for guys who got a few more rounds under their belt playing at Riviera.
All right. Anyone else from that range before we get to those lower tier guys?
Pulling it up now, Brooks Koepka's really interesting. I got him at plus 2,500. His iron play was outstanding in Phoenix. You wonder if he, you know, he always just brings it so much more in these bigger events. And this is basically a major championship caliber field. You noted how many elite players we've got, 12 of the top 15 or something along those lines. He's a guy who you might be interested in this week. Another guy at plus 4,000, Adam Scott. Led the field in greens and regulation last year at Riviera. He's got a pretty good history before that. I think that's a pretty good number for Adam Scott. He's right there around the lines of what Jordan Spieth at plus 4,000, Hideki Matsuyama plus 4,500. So, Adam Scott, not a ton of success recently since this win at Riviera, but, you know, the defending champion who's an excellent ball striker on a course that really demands it.
Anything about the Masters, the Augusta National correlation to Riviera? I made mention in my preview piece this week that 5 of the last 7 winners at Riviera have been Masters champions. That is skewed a little bit because, of course, Bubba Watson has been 3 of those winners. And so, of course, he's won the Masters twice. But then you have Scott, who you mentioned, and DJ, of course. Is there anything to – hey, guys that play well at Augusta should or can play well at Riviera as well?
Just pulling up the list of winners, and it's a great question because it's not just there's got to be something about lefties there, right? At the Masters, I mean, Phil, yeah, both. Bubba, Mike Weir. Mike Weir's won twice at Riviera. Phil's had success at Riviera. He's won here. It's Bubba Watson, obviously, 3 wins here. There's got to be something about the shot shape, right? I mean, it's just something that just fits, you know, when you tie those two venues together. But amazingly, Riviera, Tiger has never won. I don't think Jack's ever won at Riviera either.
No.
So it's a pretty incredible, correlation there between some of the similarities and maybe the demands of the game between Riviera and Augusta National.
Load up Brian Harman? I don't know. I don't know what we
is
can
Akshay
do about lefty
playing?
Information. Akshay, I was going to actually look to see if Akshay was playing. I don't think he is.
No, probably not.
I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day who's trying to make it and going to one of the Q schools for one of the PGA Tour levels. And he said, yeah, we're sitting at the bar at West Orange last week, and he's looking up at the TV, sees Akshay, who's in second place at that point. He goes, dude, I'm supposed to play against him in a qualifier in like 2 weeks. I'm like, yeah, good luck with that, bro. You're playing against me today. You're playing against Akshay in 2 weeks. I ain't going to prepare you for him. So, that kid can play a little bit. Let's get to this lower tier. And I always struggle, Justin, with what we consider a sleeper or a dark horse. I'm going to, based on the field this week, call it 80-1 and higher. And I've got a lot of guys that I like in this range. I'm going to start it. I'm just going to go down the list and mention a few names and and see who you like. But Carlos Ortiz at 90-1, very, very interesting to me. Matthew Fitzpatrick at 100-1, very interesting to me. I know a lot of people like Cameron Tringali. I'm not as interested in him this week. Going down the list, Lonto Griffin has played very well on tough West Coast golf courses. The Zozo, he was in that final group. Torrey a few weeks ago played really well. So he's a guy that I like. Keegan Bradley, I'm getting sucked in. The ball striking numbers are fantastic. I know that he hits it like Ben Hogan and putts like Hulk Hogan, but if he can ever get that putter going in the right direction, he putted dead even in Phoenix a few weeks ago as far as strokes gained and finished 22nd. If he could just like gain a stroke every day.
He said that's his target, right? Between like even and a stroke per round. Yeah, for sure.
He can do it. And the one.
And how many times, when you think of Keegan Bradley, one of the moments you always think of beyond the Ryder Cup PGA Championship is that duel with Phil Mickelson at Riviera.
Yes. So and Bill Haas was in there too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, the two dramatic putts those guys made back to back. It was a great moment. I think it was almost 10 years ago now.
I
can't believe
I root for Keegan. I know Keegan really well. And, Keegan sometimes gets a bad rap in like the betting and DFS communities.
Freaking Keegan just totally boned me on the weekend.
I'm getting better at every aspect of my game. If I go out and hit it this way, that it's just not going to come off strong.
I hate fucking Keegan Bradley.
So Keegan's a great guy, and I still think he's a tremendous player who is going to get back to that level at some point. The two other names I was going to throw out in that lower tier, the two U.S. amateur finalists from 4 years ago, Doug Gim, who finished in second place, who's playing really well right now. And then a guy, I got to jump back on the train. I've been driving this bandwagon for a long time. Doc Redman, who I've gotten off of just a little bit, but I'm a huge Doc Redman guy.
Doc Redman.
$275-1 this week. I don't think he's going to win, but that's a huge number.
Yeah, he could get maybe a little bit of value there for him to top 10 at a place where he's had obviously the biggest win of his life so far. So, yeah, for sure. I'm with you on Carlos Ortiz. My favorite number on Ortiz, he leads all players in strokes gained putting per round at Riviera the last 5 years. So, In addition to his good form, you've got that going for him. Likes the greens at Riviera. Won earlier this season, breaking through in Houston. I'm with you there on Ortiz. I got a real long shot. Now, this is a guy who has been terrible at Riviera over the last 5-6 years. The last 5 years, he's got the highest bogey average of anyone at Riviera among those who play regularly. That's not a good sell. Recent major champion. Last year was a total wash because he moved to Southern California. Two top tens in his last three starts.
Oh, no, folks. I believe it's happened. We said it at the beginning of the podcast. We thought we might lose Justin Ray because of those cold, wintry conditions in Austin, Texas. I think we lost Justin Ray. I see him still on my screen. I see him there, but he is frozen, maybe literally. I don't want to joke about it, but I won't leave you in suspense. I at least know where he was going with that play. A guy who, a recent major champion who was sort of a wash in 2020 and has been enjoying a little bit of a resurgence right now. And he just joined Riviera, moving to Southern California. That's Francesco Molinari. Yeah, I think he can play pretty well this week. So, Justin's texting me now. Power went out. No idea if you'll get this text. We died. Molinari. That's what the text messages from Justin Ray say. So, I'm going to leave you with this because I am not going to do a DFS lineup without my co-conspirator here. You can listen to us and watch us on The Gimme on Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Justin and I, along with Amanda Rose, will make a DFS lineup on there, and it'll be even better than the one we were going to do here on the pod today. But, yeah, I think we got through most of the guys that we like this week at Riviera. Should be a fantastic week. I can't wait for it. Good luck and stay safe to all the people out there in those wintry cold conditions. I feel for you guys. I've been there. I know it's no fun. So really stay safe. And if golf at least takes your mind off things a little bit this week, then hopefully we can help you out with that. So good luck with everything this week and all of your plays. Here's hoping you guys hit the green.
We're finished talking.